Welcome into an NBA Finals Week edition of Armchair Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Real quick, want to give a shout out to the band Liebecker, provide intro music for the show. We're very grateful for it. They're a great band from the Great Northwest. If you haven't checked them out, please do so. They're at www.liebeckermusic.com. So first, reactions to the game. Game one of the NBA Finals. Not exactly the series we've been hoping for so far. Granted, it's just a small sample size. We've only played one game. But it's not what we were hoping for. We wanted to see a really clutch, amazing, tight contest. And we got that in the first quarter. But the rest of the game was all Warriors and not enough Cavaliers. It looked a lot like LeBron James and Kyrie Irving taking turns playing hero ball. It just didn't work. Kevin Durant looks unstoppable. But let's get to the biggest issue at hand, and that's that I'm just sick and tired of watching Steph Curry chew on his mouth guard in between plays. It's making me hate high-definition sports, and I really don't know what to do about that. I know there are a lot of you out there that probably don't care about that, and there's a lot out there nodding your heads, and I appreciate both parties, but, you know, if he's just going to chew on the mouth guard all night, can we get that out of there? Can we just not give him one? I mean, he takes a lot of spills, but they're usually pretty clean spills. So I don't know that he really needs one if he's just going to chew on it for the camera the whole time. But back to Kevin Durant. I mean, what a monster game. I mean, that guy definitely made a difference for the Warriors. He's absolutely an upgrade over Harrison Barnes, who the Warriors decided to let go in free agency last summer. And they got Kevin Durant in the free agent lottery. And this is just a more impressive offensive unit with him on board, but they're also more impressive on defense because you basically play the whole game trying to keep up with them. And I'll be curious to see if Cleveland can do that, if they have the firepower to keep up for a whole seven-game series. We'll get into that a little bit later. Let's start with this season and where how these two teams got here. I mean, you know that neither team really faced elite competition in the playoffs. I mean, it's really weird saying that out loud, but it's the case. It's the truth. They both played teams that are very, very good. But when you talk about who's elite, there really wasn't a team that could stand up to Golden State in the West, or at least none that they played. And same with Cleveland in the East. There's no one that could really give them a fight. They only lost one game, and it was probably just a throwaway game against Boston once Isaiah Thomas was hurt. So you really wonder, have these teams been tested? Is this the first real test that they're getting in these playoffs? And the answer is absolutely yes. Neither of them have been tested. I mean, you don't go 12-0 and 11-1 and say that you've been tested. That just isn't the way life works. So this is definitely Cleveland's first real test. We're going to have to wait and see if Golden State gets tested at all. They didn't look as scary as they did last year when they went 73-9, which was the best record ever in the history of the NBA. This year they took a little bit of a step backwards, but you know, they had to get a new guy acclimated to their offense and get their offense acclimated to a new guy. And then you have Steve Kerr, who goes down around the time the playoffs start and hasn't come back yet, and yet they haven't missed a beat. If anything, they've been better than ever. I don't think that's the president of Mike Brown, the assistant coach who stepped in to take the place of Kerr, but I think that that has something to do with that. I think the team just is playing more loose than we've seen them play all year. They know what's on the line, and they're not afraid to go after it. So you clearly had a Golden State team looking relaxed in this first game. You had a LeBron James-led Cavaliers team who looked out of sorts and harassed. What does that mean for the series? Is this what we're going to see the rest of the way? Is this going to be just Golden State breezing on to their next title? Are we going to see a resurgence from LeBron and his cast of characters, or somewhere in the middle? I guess that's what I really need to know. So game one of the finals doesn't always tell the whole story. We've seen teams run away with game one only to have a very competitive series the remainder of it. And I'm hoping that's what we get this year. Last year and the year before, you can't really pull much information from, because year one of this trilogy, you had Kyrie Irving go down in overtime of game one, a game that Cleveland probably should have won, but ended up losing, and ultimately losing the series despite some spectacular play from not just LeBron James, but a cast of characters that really you wouldn't usually say are NBA all-stars. You know, you had Kyrie Irving go down and Kevin Love go down in the series or two prior to that. So you had LeBron and you had J.R. Smith, and you had Richard Jefferson, and Iman Shumpert, and Matthew Dellavedova, and you know, you really didn't have a cohesive unit of all-stars or superstars like Golden State had, where they had Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Andrew Bogut, and just, you know, the right of guys at the right time on the court in a series that they could not just win, but win well. And they ended up only winning in six games, even though that probably should have been a sweep with how little talent Cleveland had on the other side, sans LeBron. So you can't really pull much information from that series and say, here's what you can use or not use. There's really nothing there. It's a different life. It's a lifetime ago. They were different people then. Then last year, you have Harrison Barnes instead of Kevin Durant on the Golden State side. You have Draymond Green getting suspended for a game. You know, you have Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving healthy for the first time in the playoffs with LeBron. And then you have LeBron kind of going after his legacy in Game 7 especially. I mean, you could say Game 6, but definitely Game 7. So then you have this year where it's a whole different ballgame. No one really knows what to expect. You have Kevin Durant on one side, LeBron James on the other. That matchup alone, I would watch for seven games if they'll allow it. But then you also have Kyrie Irving versus Steph Curry. Again, a matchup I would watch for seven games. And you have Kevin Love and Draymond Green, which should be a good matchup, except somewhere, somehow, Kevin Love lost his backbone. And I'm not sure when he gets it back or how he gets it back. But until he can find a way to be a crafty under the basket player the way Draymond Green is, I'm not sure how deep this team can go. So we're going to talk about X factors and expectations. So who's the X factor on each team? Well, on Cleveland, the X factor has to be Kevin Love, because you know you need a big punch from Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. Without them, you are dead in the water. So if you assume that you're getting a big punch out of those two guys, and we got pretty good games out of both in game one, even though they did play a lot of hero ball in the second half, and I think they need to figure out how to cut that out. But you've got Kevin Love, who rebounds a lot, and he can shoot the three, but he's just not the under-the-basket amazing player he was in Minnesota. So we need to figure out how he gets into that role here. You can't plug Richard Jefferson in every time Love is struggling, and you can't rely on Tristan Thompson to really play center. So you need him and Kevin Love to really figure out a way to be a center, because they're going against Zaza Pachulia and JaVale McGee, who are really good centers. They're not really amazing basketball players in the grand scheme or in the truest sense, but they're really good centers. They're really good at getting the ball back in the hands of their team, and they're really good at playing defense against the team trying to score on them. You really don't have anyone on Cleveland that can do that. They had Andrew Bogut, but he broke his leg. They didn't go after Anderson Varejão, who, while he's a little bit up there in years and he's not as talented as he once was and he has trouble staying healthy, I'm honestly surprised that they didn't decide to bring him in prior to the postseason to make sure they at least had a center on the roster. But they're going to make do with the guys they have, and we'll see what they can do with that. You know, they have Deron Williams, who's a very gifted former All-Star point guard who's now backing up Kyrie Irving. You have Richard Jefferson, who's been around, and, you know, he's a savvy veteran, but I don't know how well he can play in these finals with who he's going up against. He may have a little more left in the tank than I think, but we'll see. So in Cleveland, if Kevin Love doesn't have an amazing series, I really don't know that they can do anything series long. I mean, I don't know that they can win this series is probably what I'm trying to say. Whereas on the Golden State side, really, as long as they don't mess up or suffer any major injuries, I don't know how they can lose this series. On paper, these teams don't stack up at all. Golden State is far more talented, has far more depth, and just looks better on paper and on screen against the eye test. Whereas Cleveland, on paper, you've got LeBron and Kyrie and then a pile of garbage, if I'm being frank. If you run that through the eye test, you probably don't see much better than that, because the teams that are playing in the Eastern Conference, aside from Boston, they didn't really face anybody that could play with them either on offense or defense. So I'm not sure how much they've been tested prior to this. And then, you know, even with a guy like Kyle Korver, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the history of the game, that's really all he offers you. He doesn't play very well on defense. He's not a jump shooter. He's not an inside shooter. All he does is shoot long shots from the three-point range. So he really limits you when he's on the court because you know he'll only be looking for something around the perimeter. He's not going to go inside. He's not going to do layups or dunks or anything like that. I mean, he will here and there, but his game is basically the three-point shot. So that really leaves a big hole in Cleveland's offense. They've got Kyrie Irving and LeBron James who have very similar playing styles. They both prefer to have the ball in their hands and to make a play happen on the fly, whereas you've got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green who really can just rotate in and out, and they don't have to have the ball in their hands every time. In fact, their offense runs better when three of those four are just moving around. That's going to make it tough for Cleveland to compete because Cleveland is better at getting the ball in the hands of their two playmakers and seeing what happens. And then once they overwhelm the defense, putting up points with their supporting cast. Well, now Golden State's made them have to play with their supporting cast from the get-go, which I think we're finding out very early on in this series. They may not have a very good supporting cast. I think we all knew that going in, but I didn't know if we expected them to be exposed this much. And for those of you that didn't catch the whole game, I'll just give you a real quick sum up. So basically you had a dunk fest and an offensive explosion in the first quarter. Second quarter, you had a lot of sloppy play from Cleveland where Golden State pulled out to an early halftime lead. And then the third quarter was basically Golden State building a 20 to 25 point lead and watching Cleveland just fall apart and get exhausted trying to keep up with them. And then in the fourth quarter, it was so lopsided by the 4 minute mark that Tyronn Lue actually pulled his starters with a 21 point deficit. So he was already raising the white flag at the 4 minute mark in game one of the NBA Finals. It's not the most realistic thing to expect a 21 point comeback at that point in the game, especially with your stars exhausted from trying to figure out how to play against this Golden State team. But I guess I would have liked to see a little more push from them. I don't know what we got of them tonight, and I'm hoping that it was a fluke and not Golden State setting the table for a very short and sweet series. These have already been a really boring playoffs, so I need to see more. But we'll have to see what happens on Sunday night when they play again, and hopefully Cleveland can make it a little more competitive for at least three quarters, if not all four. I would love to see one really competitive, cohesive game of basketball from two teams, especially two that are the best each conference in the NBA has to offer. You would hope that they would be really evenly matched. And yet here we are, where one team has three all-stars, potentially three superstars, and definitely four all-stars. And another team has two superstars, potentially three all-stars. But that all sounds great on paper, but when you start putting it to the eye test, you can tell that the trio slash quad of Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and now Kevin Durant is just better than LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love. And I think we all thought the Kevin Love experiment would work a lot better in Cleveland. It hasn't. He's definitely been better than he was his first season, but he still hasn't reached Chris Bosh level in the LeBron James system. So we'll see what happens there. I guess my expectation is dwindling. I was hoping for a really well-fought seven-game series like we had last year. With the addition of Kevin Durant, not looking like we're going to get that. So we're going to move on and ask the question, can LeBron, with the talent level he has on his team, can he win this series without providing a legendary performance like a Michael Jordan or a Magic Johnson or a Larry Bird? That level of performance that you talk about for years and decades later down the road, to me, it's an easy no. If he has a series that's not average by most standards, but average for him, and he had a pretty stellar game one, but it wasn't impressive from a LeBron standpoint, and fair or not, we hold him to a higher standard than most other players. I don't think this team can win if he doesn't have an out-of-his-mind series the way he did last year, at least after game five, where he just turned it to a whole nother level. We need to see that. You know, he's had a stellar playoffs, and he's passed Michael Jordan in a couple different categories. He's now passed Reggie Miller as the number two playoff three-point shooter of all time, but it's not enough. We need to see a Hall of Fame-worthy performance right now. We need to see 40 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds, 5 steals, you know, ridiculous numbers. numbers that LeBron has made look normal throughout his career, whereas now that's what's on the line. Is if he doesn't have games like that, I'm not sure they can compete. He's got to make up for the lack of talent. So another segment we wanted to talk about was these series between the Cavaliers and the Warriors have prompted people to compare them to the 80s Celtics-Lakers showdown. So we thought it'd be fun to discuss, if you had to pick one of those two, if you had to dump one or the other, which one would you pick? Because we have parts one and two of this trilogy. We haven't seen what the third part is going to look like. It looks like it could be a pretty short series, which would be really disappointing after the playoffs we've been put through this year. But let's say this one goes the distance, or at least goes to six games. So now you've got a six-game series, a seven-game series, and a six-game series. And you've definitely added talent to an already amazing team, which Boston did when they added Bill Walton in the 80s. I'm not saying that a half-healthy Bill Walton is comparable to a fully healthy Kevin Durant, but you had a Boston team that was already amazing with their big three of Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, and Robert Parrish, and now you add Bill Walton. That had to terrify teams in the 80s the same way that Kevin Durant being added to Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson terrifies teams today. And then on the other side of that, you had the Lakers, where you have Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy, A.C. Green, Byron Scott, an amazing roster. And on Boston, you also had Dennis Johnson, who was an all-star and won three different championships, one with the Seattle Supersonics, and then another pair of them actually with Boston. So you have a big four and a big four. With Cleveland, you don't really have a big four. I don't know who the fourth person would be. I guess you could say Tristan Thompson, but I'm not going that far. And then in Golden State, you have a big three, probably a big four, because you could definitely count Draymond Green as one of your big four. So you look at those two dynasties in the 80s and the two dynasties now with the Cavs and Warriors. I'm just not sure the star power lines up the way we all want it to. Boston and LA seemed tailor-made to take on each other. I mean, they were basically in an arms race to take on each other and no one else. Then you look at now and it's Golden State and Cleveland, and it seems like Golden State's a step or two ahead of Cleveland every time. I think we were all surprised when Cleveland won last year. It was definitely well-deserved and hard-fought and well-earned, but I don't think anybody looked at that matchup and thought, I would give Cleveland an even chance at this one. Whereas in the 80s, I think you gave Boston or LA an even chance at each other. You didn't really see Magic or Larry being better than the other. You didn't necessarily see Parrish or Abdul-Jabbar being better than the other. You didn't see Worthy or McHale being better than the other. And then you had Scott and Johnson, and you didn't really see one being better than the other. So it came down to coaching and depth, but it ultimately revolved around the talent around your superstars. And I just don't see that from this Cleveland team. I see LeBron having to have the series of his life for it to matter. And I think that in another time, when he didn't have to play, super teams like he is right now with Golden State, he probably could have won more championships than he already has. I mean, the guy's been to seven straight finals. It's ridiculous. We don't praise him enough for what he does, but he does tend to whine a lot and argue a lot, and he passes probably more than he should. You know, he gets going and he goes on these streaks where he'll do a dunk and then a three-pointer and then he'll drive to the basket and get a foul. And then for the next quarter or so, he's suddenly passing the ball or dumping it off or pretending to drive so he can dump it off and shaking his head, throwing his hands up. And it's just the lack of consistency. You know, he has never had a lack of greatness, but he's had a lack of consistency. And you just didn't see that from guys like Bird and Johnson or from, you know, we'll say Michael Jordan because that's always the comparison, or even from Kobe. You just didn't see that. You saw consistent greatness. And as much as people may not like Michael Jordan or they may not like Kobe Bryant because of the attitude, I can understand that. You know, Michael Jordan to a lot of people probably looked a lot like Draymond Green looks to people that don't like Golden State. And while Michael Jordan is 10 times the basketball player that Draymond Green will ever be, he still had that attitude of, I'm going to get in your head, I'm going to get in your face, I'm going to be all over you, I'm going to be here for four quarters, and you're going to have to figure out how to get around that. And I don't feel like LeBron's ever had that mentality. We've seen it a few times in his career where he went into God mode. You know, he had all the cheat codes on and he just is playing out of his mind and there's no one that can stop him. But then you see a game like Game 1 where he looks average by LeBron James standards. And so, to me, the Lakers-Celtics series probably holds more weight and more sway in the NBA lore because all three matchups were really good, and they probably should have had a fourth or a fifth, but unfortunately the Rockets and the 76ers and the Pistons were just a little too good back then, so they didn't get as many as they probably should have. It probably should have been a five or six series season throughout the decade, but we got what we got, and we're happy with it. So, gun to my head, I would pick the 80s Celtics and Lakers over this trilogy we're getting now from Cleveland and Golden State. But you never know if Cleveland can make this series competitive or even shock the world and pull off the upset. I might change my mind on that. I guess it'll depend on how the series looks when the whole thing's said and done. So moving on to who's going to win this series. In my mind, I look at this game one, and while you can't grade a series outcome based on game one, I'm going to do it anyway and say that I think unless a miracle happens, this is an easy Golden State victory. I don't think that Cleveland has the firepower to stop Kevin Durant. I don't think they have the firepower to keep up with this team the way they're playing. And even if Ty Lue comes up with some amazing coaching tricks, I just think that this is going to be hard for Cleveland to overcome. So I'm going to call Golden State in six games. I think Cleveland can win a pair, but I don't think they'll be able to do more than that. And I'm sure some of you out there are thinking that another loss in the finals will somehow hurt LeBron James's legacy. And to me, that's just not going to happen. The guy's been to seven straight finals. This is his eighth finals in all. And while he may not have a winning record, the guy is still just, it's an amazing feat to even get to this many. And, you know, it's the same way I look at Peyton Manning in football, that the guy did so many things for the game. He was a supreme talent that set the standard for what a quarterback should look like in the passing age of the NFL. And I think LeBron's done that for basketball. You know, he may not be Kobe Bryant, he may not be Michael Jordan, but he's still one of the greatest of all time. And I don't think a loss this year takes him down a peg. And I also, on the flip side of that, don't think that if he wins, we can cement him as some amazing superstar. He's already there. He's already one of the best players of all time. If you're making the top 10 players of all time, he's on that list. He's probably in the top 5, depending on who you're talking to. So I don't know how one outcome or another changes that. I don't think that you look at him in a different way based on how this series goes. That said, if he can somehow turn it on and blow Golden State out of the water and win this game in 6 or 7, maybe that puts him on a different level, but to some people, to me, the guy is one of the best ever. He's in the top 5 of all time, arguably the discussion of greatest of all time. You can't really compare eras, so I'm not going to do that and compare Jordan to LeBron or Johnson to LeBron. He's a different player in a different era, and what he's done is tremendous. While we're on the subject of legacies and showdowns for the ages, we're going to flip over to our final segment. We only have a little bit of time left in the show. Trying to get everybody in and out of here in 30 minutes or less. So we know you got busy lives. So wanted to talk some Game of Thrones. I know it's not NBA Finals related, but season 7 is right around the corner. It's about a month and a half away. And I know all of you out there that are watching this show as avidly as I do are dying to know what happens next. You know, we finished season 6 with Daenerys sailing with about a million ships with Varys and Tyrion and the Greyjoy siblings all aboard and part of her army going towards Westeros. And then you have Cersei, who is now the queen in the Iron Throne after blowing up everybody in the I guess just the massacre, whatever you want to call it. And then we saw Tommen jump out of a window. We know that Margaery is no longer among the living, and neither is the High Sparrow, and neither is Lannis. And now you have Jaime home from helping Walter Frey get back River Run. And he's seeing Cersei do what we assume he decided to stop the Mad King from doing all these years ago and earn his name, the Kingslayer. And then aside from all that, you have Bran, who is now able to see into the past, and we now know that Jon Snow is probably the son of both a Targaryen and a Stark, and may have the greatest right to the throne of anybody. And who knows, maybe he's even the reason behind the Song of Ice and Fire, because he would then have fire and ice in his veins. But he's not technically the Lord of Winterfell, even though he did get everyone to stand behind him. He still technically could lose that to Sansa, who maybe is on his side, maybe not. We're not really sure. Littlefinger kind of got in her ear a little bit at the end of last season and shared a little knowing look at her when everyone was calling Jon the King of the North. So we're not sure what's going to happen there. And so you've got all that going on. And then in the midst of all this, people have seemed to have forgotten that there's the White Walkers that are coming and coming and coming. And now it's about to be winter, or it is winter, and it's summer, but it's winter. It's very confusing. It's very exciting. I'm really curious to see where this season goes. I'm curious if Sam is going to find in the Citadel libraries some record of Ned's sister marrying the Mad King's brother, and now they've got a documented marriage, and it wasn't, you know, a scary situation like everyone thought, and instead it was two kids in love and they had a baby. But Robert Baratheon wasn't going to allow that to happen, so that's why she had to get him in Ned's hands so that he could protect him. And here we go. I don't know what to expect, but I know that it's going to be amazing. Every season of the show has been amazing. And I love having an HBO subscription, but this time of year I'm especially grateful for it. And I would probably pay double or triple, but don't let HBO hear that, because they already charge way more than they should. I mean, $10 a month to watch stuff is a little ridiculous, but then again, I pay the same to Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, and it adds up, guys, all right? My Comcast bill is already through the roof. Now I've got all these streaming services too, because they won't put it all on Comcast and nobody offers the same stuff. But that's a whole other thing. So all I can say is I'm excited about Game of Thrones. I'm curious what's going to happen. I'm not really sure my prediction stands. I would love to see Jon on the Iron Throne. I would love to see Dany on the Iron Throne. It would be really neat if somehow those two kids got together. And it was, but I don't know how that works. I mean, I guess if we prove Targaryen, or that Jon's a Targaryen, and we know that they didn't exactly have family trees that branched a lot, I don't know that I like the idea of Jon and Dany getting together, but that might be what ends up happening in this really weird, twisted world that George R.R. Martin's created for all of us to watch and read and react to. And also, that after the massacre at the end of last season, that there won't be something like that with, you know, a Ned beheading or a Red Wedding or the massacre at the trial last year. They've got to hope, and, you know, Joffrey's death. They've had so many things. Or the worst one was probably when the Mountain killed the Red Viper. That was not good. We thought we had finally seen something good was about to happen, and instead something terrible happened. Every time we think that we're about to see something great, something terrible like Ramsay Snow happens. So I'm really hoping that with all this good going on, that it's going to work in our favor. But you also have Cersei sitting on the Iron Throne, so anything can happen. So with that note, we'll wrap up the show, and we'll say that we hope that the NBA Finals goes well. And we'll catch up with all of you guys on that later next week after Game 2. And on that note, we'll also hope that season 7 of Game of Thrones goes really well, because we only get 2 more. For those of you who didn't know, there's only going to be 8 seasons in all, regardless of what George R.R. Martin does with his book series. This is as far in as HBO is going. They've got this season and next season, and that's it. So thank you all for listening. I'd like to give another quick shout out to the band Liebecker. Appreciate everything you guys do for the show, providing music for the show. And if you haven't checked them out, please do so, www.liebeckermusic.com. This has been a presentation of Oregon Sports News, and this is Armchair Sports. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt, signing off. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend.